provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about M&A insights in CW 2526. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the core question shaping deal making right now. In a world of increasing complexity and uncertainty, what truly defines a successful M&A outcome, beyond just the signature on the contract? We've sifted through the most insightful M&A trends and shifts from LinkedIn content over calendar weeks 25 and 26 to bring you a concentrated burst of actionable knowledge.
That's precisely our mission. This deep dive is designed to be your fast track to understanding critical shifts in deal making. We'll explore everything from the often overlooked early preparation steps to navigating the tricky waters of post-merger integration, giving you a clearer, more informed picture of what's truly important in the M&A landscape today.
Think of it as a shortcut to being well-informed, maybe with a few surprising facts along the way.
Exactly. Hopefully just enough humor to keep you hooked, too.
All right, let's start at the beginning, a place often underestimated: the criticality of pre-deal preparation and valuation. We're talking about why getting your house in order long before an LOI is signed isn't just a good idea. It's absolutely non-negotiable for protecting value and ensuring deals actually close.
Yeah. And what's often overlooked here is how many founders, you know, they postpone fundamental fixes. They think they can just address issues on the fly when a buyer shows up.
Right. Deal momentum will carry it through somehow.
Exactly. But as Khaled Azhar forcefully points out, waiting to resolve structural problems like unassigned IP or too much owner dependence or just messy financials, it's incredibly expensive. He puts it bluntly, and I love this line: buyers don't pay for potential, they pay for prepared.
That's a great line.
It is, isn't it? And the sort of non-obvious takeaway is that this preparation itself signals maturity and significantly reduces perceived risk for the buyer. That often translates directly into a higher valuation because, well, you're selling certainty, not just hope.
That makes perfect sense. It's fundamentally about de-risking it for the buyer. And it's not just those big structural issues either, is it? Ramin Zakaria highlights networking capital as a major hidden value lever.
Ah, yes. NWC. Always a fun one.
Right. For those maybe less familiar, networking capital. It's basically your current assets minus your current liabilities.
Yeah.
It dictates the cash a business needs to operate right after closing. Mismanaging it can lead to deals blowing up late in the game or sellers leaving serious money on the table because of last-minute price adjustments, you know, retrading.
It sounds small, but it can absolutely sink a deal.
Definitely.
And Kristen Thompson reinforces this. She notes that networking capital is one of the most commonly misunderstood elements, particularly for first-time sellers. It just underscores that meticulous financial data isn't just for good accounting. It's a critical deal maker.
There has to be proof.
Exactly. We saw a great example from Rob Mann, who shared a client's experience. Their well-organized HubSpot data, efficient access, confident interpretation of marketing and sales metrics like CAC and LTV, it genuinely super impressed the reviewers and helped their deal sail through. It's proof positive that clear data reduces buyer anxiety.
So it's about transparency and, you know, verifiable data. But there's also the very human side of preparation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jacqueline Ring brings up an excellent point that businesses are valued higher if they aren't completely reliant on the founder.
Oh, absolutely. Key person risk.
It's about building leadership depth and solid processes years in advance. Otherwise, buyers see it as buying a job rather than a scalable business, and that can really discount your valuation.
And this leads us to a crucial question. How do you maintain deal certainty once that letter of intent, the LOI, is signed? Victor L. cautions that deals die in the gap between LOI and close if founders, well, take their foot off the gas.
Mm-hmm. Coasting is dangerous.
Totally. Buyers are watching everything. Performance, team stability, even your own enthusiasm. Any drop in performance can quickly erode trust, costing millions in valuation. It's also worth noting, as Andre Achtermeyer observed, that German buyers tend to move slower in diligence, but once an LOI is signed, they're often more deeply committed compared to U.S. counterparts.
Interesting cultural difference there.
It suggests different market norms around what signals commitment, you know.
Okay, so pivoting from preparation to what happens after the handshake.
Right, the integration phase. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the human equation is consistently highlighted as the decisive factor. It's where synergies are captured and, frankly, where most deals ultimately succeed or fail. It's rarely just about the number.
That's undeniably true. Amipande Parvez shares a striking insight. Up to 30% of key employees often leave after an acquisition because mergers trigger what she calls brain-level threats.
Brain-level threats, wow.
Yeah. She explains how the SCARF model status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness can be a powerful tool for retention. It helps leaders align not just systems, but maybe more importantly, the psychological needs of their teams. It's really about empathy in a highly uncertain time.
And what's fascinating here is how often the biggest risks aren't financial or legal, but human. Andrew Creeley highlights that when founders exit or key staff depart, even otherwise strong deals can get derailed. It just makes integration so much harder than it needs to be.
Tyler Martin's story about Michael Seitz really drives this home. Seitz acquired 42 stores in one day.
42 in a day.
Incredible, right. But two of those deals were total flops because the teams just unraveled during due diligence and then immediate culture clashes happened right after close. It's a powerful reminder that the hard work doesn't stop after the contract's signed.
Not at all.
You can have a great deal on paper, but the people side makes or breaks it every single time. It's like two different species suddenly forced to share a nest.
That's a good analogy. And Anthony Greenfield frames this perfectly. Culture is the hard edge where value is either unlocked or lost. He explains that successful integrations don't just passively hope for cultural alignment. They proactively define a future culture, align leadership behaviors, and reinforce a shared purpose right from day one.
You have to build it intentionally.
Exactly. Alexander Kitchen also found that success in financial advice M&A hinged heavily on people, culture, and shared values, not merely the deal structure itself.
And a core part of managing that human element is communication. Alexis Chevalier emphasizes that a structured communication plan rooted in IPMA standards acts as a lifeline for SMEs navigating M&A integration.
A lifeline, yeah.
It's no surprise, really, given that a staggering 70% of deals reportedly fail due to poor communication. Think about that. A well-crafted email or a thoughtful town hall can literally save a multi-million dollar deal.
It really reinforces the strategic importance of these human elements. Loretta Ogleti-Krakowskina's lesson is clear and concise. It's truly about people and team that shapes the outcome.
Simple, but powerful.
And Elizabeth Cascat adds that effective leaders aren't just, giving directives. They're listening closely to uncover hidden challenges and build trust throughout the integration process. Listening is key.
So if we're talking about securing a deal, what does all of this mean for de-risking it? It turns out there are quite a few hidden pitfalls, especially when it comes to risk and compliance that, you need to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. Abdulrahman Hamad provides a useful overview here, highlighting warranties, indemnities, and transaction insurance as key mechanisms for mitigating transaction risks. These are the crucial sort of front lines of defense that you absolutely must understand.
And there's a fascinating legal evolution happening in this space, too. Soren Lindstrom discusses forfeiture for competition, or FFC, provisions.
FFCs, right, as a newer alternative to traditional non-compete covenants. Unlike a blanket non-compete, an FFC provision might let a seller compete, but only if they forfeit, say, a portion of their deal proceeds or equity. It's a clever way buyers are trying to protect their investment and IP in a world where traditional non-competes are facing more and more challenges in court.
That makes a lot of sense. And it brings us to why advisors are so crucial. Molly Boo gives some really strong advice on selecting a knowledgeable tax advisor. This isn't just about preparing returns. It's about understanding the often conflicting interests between buyer and seller.
Always conflicting interests there.
Right. And how subtle changes in deal structure can profoundly impact the taxes owed by both parties. It's just non-negotiable for optimizing outcomes, especially if you have multi-state or international operations. You need that expertise.
And in our increasingly digital age, entirely new risks emerge. Valentin Sisoyev points out a stark statistic. 53% of organizations face cybersecurity incidents post-merger.
Over half. That's huge.
It is. Early cybersecurity assessments are no longer optional. They can save an average of $5 million and ensure smoother transitions. That's a massive incentive to get it right early.
Absolutely. And a key insight emerges here from Shara Nanji, who stresses that Pillar the Second tax exposure isn't just some niche tax issue, but a critical business issue in M&A. It requires proactive mitigation throughout the deal lifecycle.
Pillar 3, the global minimum tax rule.
Exactly. It can significantly impact multinationals. So it really raises an important question. Are you thinking about compliance and risk early enough and comprehensively enough to avoid nasty surprises down the line?
Good question. Now let's pivot to something truly transformative. Here's where it's really interesting. how technology and digital plays are not just supporting, but actively reshaping M&A as we know it.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing big tech moves driving this. Oliver Mollander and Mark O'Neill reported on Apple reportedly considering acquiring Perplexity AI.
Ah, the AI race.
Right. It just underscores the fierce competition for generative AI assets and talent out there. Jason Saltzman even questions if Apple's traditional acqui-hire strategy, you know, buying companies mainly for the people, will hold up as its AI implementation lags. He suggests it might lead to an M&A bender of larger, more strategic acquisitions for them.
An M&A bender. I like that. And there are some fascinating new concepts emerging from this tech shift, too.
Yeah.
Suresh S. Iyer mentions applying quantum thinking to M&A.
Quantum thinking. Okay, explain that one.
Right. To solve integration challenges with nonlinear logic. Instead of just linear problem solving, quantum thinking suggests embracing the inherent uncertainty and complexity. It's about recognizing that in M&A, 1 plus 1 doesn't always equal 2.
Or sometimes it equals 3 or 1.5.
Exactly. You sometimes need to consider multiple, seemingly contradictory states at the same time to find true synergy. Basically, navigating integration with more fluid, adaptive mindset.
Interesting concept. On a more practical, maybe futuristic note, Jay Lewin introduced an AI deal concierge.
AI deal concierge.
Yeah, that's apparently revolutionizing M&A with personalized service for buyers. Imagine an AI that's like your personal deal scout. It not only sifts through massive amounts of data to find perfectly matched targets, but then, and this is key, it also performs forensic-level due diligence in minutes.
Wow.
Flagging potential risks or opportunities long before human analysts even get involved. This hyper-personalized multi-agent system uses AI to build targeted prospect lists and conduct deep due diligence, and it's already generating significant revenue. It just shows how data-driven personalization is dramatically accelerating deal flow and changing how deals get sourced and evaluated.
Speed must be encrypted.
Exactly. And considering the larger trends, agility is truly the new normal for M&A strategy, especially in these uncertain times. Companies that can adapt quickly are the ones finding success.
Yeah, Matt Pelton and Wolf Tone, referencing a Deloitte survey, highlight how M&A leaders are pivoting. They're using non-traditional deals, flexible financing like private credit, targeting specific sectors, and really pushing cross-border expansion.
Uh-huh.
It's all about adapting your playbook to a fast-changing market.
And Michael Drebin adds to this, noting that the top-performing companies don't just react to opportunities. They pursue M&A programmatically. They consistently outperform their peers in shareholder returns because they build repeatable M&A capabilities. They treat deal-making as a core strategic competency.
It's not just a one-off event. It's a muscle they continuously build.
Well put.
And that kind of disciplined strategic approach requires strong leadership. Dharmendra Singh's perspective is that effective M&A needs transformational CEOs, decisive action, bold targets, emphasizing a long-term value-driven mindset, not just short-term gains.
And the boards, too. Boards now play an increasingly crucial, multifaceted role. Frank Akulla emphasizes that boards go way beyond simple deal approval now. They guide strategy, diligence, communication, integration. They really shape and sustain deals throughout their life cycle. Their oversight is more critical than ever.
It's also increasingly a global game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dave Gilbert points out the absolute necessity to consider the global chessboard before M&A deals. Top investment banks now do these deep dives into political and economic stability in target regions.
Geopolitical due diligence.
Exactly. And they bake protective clauses into contracts to de-risk against those geopolitical shifts. You have to.
And switching back to the seller side for a moment, Jeffrey Sklar observed some evolving challenges. We're seeing escalating post-closing disputes over things like true-ups and earnouts.
The post-closing headaches.
Right. Deeper due diligence than ever, and evolving definitions of what constitutes a material adverse effect, or MAE. So it really raises an important question for sellers. Are you truly deal ready? And is your counsel prepared for these increasingly nuanced challenges in today's M&A environment?
Good points. And ultimately, Tim Vipon makes a critical point that ties all this together. M&A failures aren't usually about price. They're about process.
Process.
It powerfully reinforces the need for a disciplined, maybe 10-step roadmap from initial strategy definition all the way through to post-merger integration. It's about the journey, not just the destination price tag. Okay, let's zoom out a bit now and look at some interesting sector and regional hotspots that have been buzzing in calendar weeks 25 and 26.
Yeah, what we're seeing globally is a kind of recalibration of M&A hotspots. Take Iberia, for instance. Andres Bosch Alomar highlights that it's fast establishing itself as a strategic hub for tech M&A.
Iberia. Interesting. Why there?
Well, beyond resilient economies, it seems to be about increasingly competitive valuations, particularly in SaaS, AI, and cybersecurity. Plus, there's a burgeoning talent pool and a receptive regulatory environment. It's becoming a really compelling alternative to traditional tech markets.
Makes sense. Shifting to healthcare, John Warner discusses how M&A is reshaping U.S. healthcare post-COVID, creating significant opportunities for innovation and consolidation.
A lot happening in healthcare.
Definitely. And Julia Kastner, the CEO of Brighton Health, shares a fascinating perspective on why small tech companies should actually acquire even smaller ones. She emphasizes buy versus build for accelerating their product roadmap, speeding up regulatory approval, and instantly deepening customer relationships. It's a very smart, targeted strategy.
That's clever. We're also seeing interesting activity in other sectors, too. Stefan Holscher predicts continued M&A in European merchant acquiring, while Oliver Grigat provides a detailed analysis of key drivers in industrial tech M&A.
Industrial tech is heating up, too.
Seems so. And Jonathan Sherry explores how mid-sized banks are increasingly looking to M&A for growth, mainly due to rising costs and intense competition. It's a clear trend there.
Fascinating stuff. We also saw Kurt Jacobs analyze robust M&A activity among corporate finance teams right in the UK Midlands, showing that regional strength. And Carlos Llanos de la Hoz delved into how immigration trends are influencing M&A strategies in Colombia.
Immigration trends as a diligence item.
Yeah, as a novel due diligence item. It's a unique angle on how these big macro trends impact deal-making on the ground.
Wow. Okay. Finally, let's maybe look at some direct deal highlights and practitioner insights from the past couple of weeks. These offer some concrete lessons right from the trenches.
Yeah, definitely. We saw the merger of Moss Adams and Baker Tilly, which Finley Gillespie highlighted. That creates a larger, pretty formidable advisory platform in the accounting space.
Big move there.
And Michael Morrow's team advised on the acquisition of EMEC Machine Tools in advanced manufacturing, which signals continued confidence and investment in that sector.
Good to see. And one observation that truly stood out was Doug Woodburn's report on QBS Software CEO Dave Stevenson. He revealed their successful off-market acquisition strategy.
Well, off-market.
Meaning they actively seek out and acquire companies that aren't even listed for sale. It's a testament to proactive scouting and relationship building. Tim Halford also discussed Zainadin's strategic M&A approach for building a truly integrated firm, showcasing that kind of methodical growth through acquisition.
Very proactive. Chris Irwin also had discussions on recent M&A deals in the creator economy and digital audio agencies, showing continued momentum and consolidation in those, you know, rapidly evolving areas.
Absolutely. And Mike Brady observed a rising trend of acquisition offers for employee-owned businesses. He highlights ESOP's potential to use M&A as both a shield and sword. A shield to protect value and a sword to actually expand employee ownership. It's a compelling dual purpose for those unique structures.
Shield and sword. I like that.
Yeah.
And we had some truly valuable practitioner perspectives, too, like the Better Deals episode featuring Otavio Furlan of Grupo F. Camara discussing the very human side of M&A, which really circles back to our earlier themes.
It all connects.
Or Jeff Black's Delivering the Deal podcast looking at UK pensions and M&A. Daniel Guadella even brought real-world M&A strategy to university students, engaging them on the crucial differences between defensive and offensive deals. It's great to see that knowledge transfer happening.
Yeah, definitely. And to highlight the critical role of empathy again, Clincy Kendrick's Master Your Merger episode featured Jennifer J. Fondrevay. She has this unique perspective on honoring the past in M&A cultural integration. She even uses an honor and release ceremony.
An honor and release ceremony.
Yeah. As an example of how empathy can facilitate healthy change and build trust rather than just imposing new structures from the top down. It's about acknowledging what came before.
That's a powerful idea. And just to bring it all together, Sarah C. Ruby and Joan Coyce Woodward mentioned Traveler's 2025 M&A study. It found that a remarkable 92% of deals involve private equity.
92%.
I know. It's not just a statistic. It really reinforces the growing need for robust and sophisticated post-M&A risk management, especially as private equity continues to dominate the landscape so heavily. That brings us to the end of another insightful deep dive into the M&A landscape. We hope these concentrated insights give you a significant edge in understanding where the market is heading and how to approach deal making with greater foresight.
Yeah, lots to think about there.
If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on private equity insights, strategy and consulting, and venture capital. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.